Chapter 35. Never too late for truth and plain speaking. Napoleon, blandly, to your ally, the Tsar, I must refer you. He was it, and not I, who tempted you to push for war, when Ala must have shown near every prophet, to have lain in peace. He cannoned them, yes, much or small, and me. King, with a head shake, I would make up, would well make up, my mind to half my kingdom's loss, could in such limb, but Magdeburg not lie. Dear Magdeburg, plus of my heart hold, that I would retain. Napoleon, our words take not such pattern as is wont to grace occasions of festivity.
He turns brusquely from the king. The banquet proceeds with a more general conversation. When finished, a toast is proposed. He freedom of the seas, and drunk with enthusiasm.
Spirit sinister, another hit at England and her tubs. I hear harsh echoes from her chalky chines. Spirit of the pities, oh heed not England now. Still read the queen. One grieves to see her spend her pretty spells upon the man who has so injured her.
They rise from table, and the folding doors being opened they pass into the adjoining room. Here are now assembled Murat, Talleyrand, Cowrican, Calcrith, Berthier, Bessieres, Collingert, Labanoff, Bennigsen, and others. Napoleon, having spoken a few words here and there, resumes his conversation with Queen Louisa, and parenthetically offers snuff to the Countess Voss, her lady-in-waiting. Talleyrand, who has observed Napoleon's growing interest in the Queen, contrives to get near him.
Talleyrand, in a whisper, Sire, is it possible that you can bend to let one woman's fairness filch from you all the resplendent fortune that attends the grandest victory of your grand career?
The Queen's quick eye observes, and flashes at the whisper, and she obtains a word with the minister.
Queen, sarcastically, I should infer, dear Monsieur Talleyrand, only two persons in the world regret my having come to Tilsit. Talleyrand, madam, two? Can any, who may such sad rascals be? Queen, you, and myself, prince.
Gravely.
Yes, myself and you.
Talleyrand's face becomes impassive, and he does not reply. Soon the queen prepares to leave, and Napoleon rejoins her.
Napoleon, taking a rose from a vase, dear queen, do pray accept this little token, a souvenir of me before you go.
He offers her the rose, with his hand on his heart. She hesitates, but accepts it.
Queen, impulsively, with waiting tears, let Magdeburg come with it, sire. Oh yes. Napoleon, with sudden frigidity, it is for you to take what I can give. And I give this no more.
15. She turns her head to hide her emotion, and withdraws. Napoleon steps up to her, and offers his arm. She takes it silently, and he perceives the tears on her cheeks. They cross towards the anteroom, away from the other guests.
Napoleon, softly, still weeping, dearest lady, why is this?
Queen, seizing his hand and pressing it,
your speeches darn the tearings of your sword. Between us two, as man and woman now, is't even possible you question why? Oh, why did not the greatest of the age of future ages of the ages past, this one time win a woman's worship, yea, for all her little life?
Napoleon, gravely,
know you, my fair, that I in this deserve your pity. Some force within me, baffling mine intent, carries me onward, whether I will or no. My star is what's to blame, not I. It is unswervable.
Queen,
then now, alas! My duty's done as mother, wife, and queen. I'll say no more, but that my heart is broken.
Exeunt Napoleon, queen, and lady-in-waiting.
Spirit of the years, he spoke thus at the bridge of Lodi. Strange, he's of the few in Europe who discern the working of the will. Spirit of the pities, if that be so, better for Europe lacked he such discerning.
Napoleon returns to the room and joins Talleyrand.
Napoleon, aside to his minister, my God, it was touch, and go that time, Talleyrand. She was within an ace of getting over me. As she stepped into the carriage she said in her pretty way, oh, I have been cruelly deceived by you.
and when she sank down inside, not knowing I heard, she burst into sobs fit to move a statue. The devil take me, if I hadn't a good mind to stop the horses, jump in, give her a good kissing, and agree to all she wanted. Ha ha, well, a miss is as good as a mile. Had she come sooner with those sweet, beseeching blue eyes of hers, who knows what might not have happened. But she didn't come sooner, and I have kept in my right mind. The Russian Emperor, the King of Prussia, and other guests advance to bid adieu. They depart severally. When they are gone, Napoleon turns to Talleyrand.
Adhere, then, to the treaty as it stands. Change not there a single article, but write it fair forthwith.
Exeunt Napoleon, Talleyrand, and other ministers and officers in waiting. Shade of the earth, some surly voice afar I heard now of an insult Britannic quality. What's any of the cause? Spirit ironic, perchance I do. Britain is roused, in her slow, stolid style, by Bonaparte's pronouncement at Berlin against her cargoes, commerce, life itself, and now from outer water citadel blows counter-blasting her durs. Rumors tell. Rumor I, from havens of fierce France and her lies, with poor precious freight of merchandise woe so adventures, England pounds as prize. Rumor too, thereat Napoleon names her, furiously, cursed oligarch, arch pirate of the sea, who shall lack room, to live while liveth he. Chorus of the pities, aerial music, and peoples are enmeshed in new calamity. Curtain of evening shades.
Act second, scene I, the Pyrenees and valleys adjoining, the view is from upper air, immediately over the region, that lies between Bayonne on the north, Pampeluna on the south, and San Sebastian on the west, including a portion of the Cantabrian mountains. The month is February, and snow covers, not only the peaks, but the lower slopes. The roads over the passes are well beaten. Dumb show, at various elevations multitudes of Napoleon's soldiery, to the number of about 30,000, are discerned in a creeping progress across the frontier from the French to the Spanish side. The thin long columns serpentine along the roads, but are sometimes broken, while at others they disappear altogether behind vertical rocks and overhanging woods. The heavy guns and the whitey-brown tilts of the baggage wagon seem the largest objects in the procession, which are dragged laboriously up the incline to the watershed, their lumbering being audible as high as the clouds. Simultaneously the river Bidassoa, in a valley to the west, is being crossed by a train of artillery and another 30,000 men, all forming part of the same systematic advance. Along the great highway through Biscay the wandering native carters draw their sheep-skinned ox teams aside, to let the regiments pass, and stray groups of peaceable field workers never look inquiringly at the marching and prancing progress. Time passes, and the various northern strongholds are approached by these legions. Their governors emerge at a summons, and when seeming explanations have been given the unwelcome comers are doubtfully admitted. The chief places to which entrance is thus obtained are Pampeluna, and San Sebastian at the front of the scene, and far away towards the shining horizon of the Mediterranean, Figueras, and Barcelona. Dumb show concludes as the mountain mists close over. Scene 2, Aranjuez, near Madrid. A room in the palace of Godoy, the Prince of Peace, a private chamber is disclosed, richly furnished with paintings, vases, mirrors, silk hangings, gilded lounges, and several lutes of rare workmanship. The hour is midnight, the room being lit by screened candelabra. In the center at the back of the scene, is a large window heavily curtained. Godoy and the Queen Maria Luisa are dallying on a sofa. The Prince of Peace is a fine handsome man in middle life, with curled hair and a mien of easy good nature. The Queen is older, but looks younger in the dim light, from the lavish hues of beautifying arts. She has pronounced features, dark eyes, low brows, black hair bound by a jeweled bandeau, and brought forward in curls over her forehead and temples, long heavy earrings, an open bodice, and sleeves puffed at the shoulders. A cloak and other mufflers lie on a chair beside her.
Godoy. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.